With the holidays around the corner, now's your chance to save time and money at Safeway Stock Up Sale. Plus, earn 4 times gas reward points on participating items. Look for tags on items like Honey Nut Cheerios. Select varieties are 4 for $8 with your club card. And select varieties of Betty Crocker Cake Mix, Brownie Mix, or Frosting are 10 for $10 with your club card. Maximum gas reward at participating Sunoco stations is 20 cents per gallon and $1 per gallon at Safeway stations in a single fill-up up to 25 gallons. Other restrictions, limitations, and exclusions apply. For complete details, go to Safeway.com.
Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of Locked On Cavaliers. As always, I'm your host, Chris Manning from Fear the Sword and the Step Back. Today, we are recapping the Cavs-Hawks game, the Cavs' first loss of the season, with Brad Rowland, the host of Locked On Cavs, and a writer whose work I'm sure you've seen in places like FanSided and Peachtree Hoops SB Nation's Hawks blog. It's a good show. We got into some of the nitty-gritty of this game. I looked at a matchup of teams that have played in the playoffs the last 2 years, but the Hawks went over a facelift, the Cavs won the title. And really, the Cavs really did kind of have some of their first struggles of the year. Again, not a lot to take away from this, but a show that I think you'll really enjoy. Brad's always someone I really, really enjoy talking to about basketball. He's a really smart guy, really good, just a good guy. And I think you'll enjoy the show, so make sure you check it out. Go leave us that 5-star rating and review on iTunes. And we'll be back tomorrow with a deeper conversation that I'm going to have with Carter Rodriguez to talk about Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving's role in the Cavaliers' offense this season. So enjoy the show with Brad Rowland, and we'll be back tomorrow.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey Brad, how's it going?
I'm all right, man. It's a long day. It's very, very late on this Tuesday, but yeah. Ready to talk some basketball because that's our job, you know?
Yeah, that is what we're here to do. It's another Locked On Cavs, Locked On Hawks crossover. We are recording this late not only because I was covering the game, but it took me a good... It's election night as you record this. It took me about 20, 30 minutes longer than it normally would to get home because there's just kind of a lot going on. So apologies to Brad on my end for this being a little bit later, but interesting game. The Cavs is first loss of the year. The Hawks are the first team to beat the Cavs this season. The Cavs are now 6-1. The Hawks now 5-2. It's a 110-106 win for the Hawks. The Hawks obviously no Kyle Korver in this game, no Mike Scott or Thiago Splitter. The Cavs had everybody. And I think that, Brad, the big thing that I took away from this game, and we'll start here, we can go broadly and kind of get deeper into this. The Cavs took 42 threes, and as you put it right before we started recording, if the Hawks give up that many threes again, there's not a very good chance the Cavs are, A, going to shoot that bad from three again, and if they do hit that many threes again and they hit more of that number, let's say they get up to, like, let's say 35%, the Cavs probably win this game by, 10 points or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, coming into the game, I think most Hawks fans, they want to focus a lot on rebounding, and the Hawks did a really good job on the rebounding battle tonight with Dwight Howard. He's the big change, of course, for Atlanta, and we can talk about him later as to what he did. But something that Brett Legree of Hoopinion and I talked about actually on Twitter earlier in the day was that I thought the bigger problem in the playoffs last year was allowing so many 3-point attempts, and that of course happened again today, really even more. Early, especially the first half, Cleveland just basically couldn't buy a shot between JR especially, but really kind of across the board. And in the end, they still shot 26% from three in this game, 11 of 42. And you said it, they make three or four more of those, and that's even a pretty modest percentage judging by the quality of looks they were getting. And this is a completely different game. So on one hand, the Hawks did play well in this game in a lot of ways, but allowing that many threes is something that really burned the Hawks last year in the playoff series. And I have something that I'm still concerned about, even with all the changes that the Hawks have made with Howard and et cetera, allowing that many threes to a team like Cleveland that has enough shooting to take that many threes responsibly is certainly going to be a problem moving forward. That happens again. You have to give the advantage to the Cavs.
Yeah, let me ask you this. How you look at how this played out and how the Cavs attacked Atlanta. I don't think it was anything unexpected. I think Atlanta had a lot of problems defending the Kyrie LeBron pick and roll when the Cavs did go to it. Not that they went to it as much as I think maybe they would in a playoff series, but is there anything you think Atlanta could do to really, you know, stop the Cavs' 3-point attempts and limit them? And you look at Howard, who's obviously, you know, a big piece for them. The Cavs have a counter for Dwight Howard inside, and that's Channing Frye. Obviously lessens your rebounding because you take Thompson off the floor. But when you have Kevin Love and Channing Frye out there, it's going to be a very stretchy front court that makes it really hard for Atlanta and maybe limit some of the things that could doom them.
Yeah, I think, you know, the Hawks, some of it's playing style for the Hawks, like the way that they trap sometimes with this, they're doing a little bit less with Howard than they were previously under the Al Horford iteration, but the way they trap and the way that the Cleveland's able to move the ball kind of opens up things for 3-point shooting. You know, a lot of it's personnel driven as well. I mean, to have, you know, especially when the Cavs play Frye, and that was the lineup that really killed the Hawks in this game, was, you know, Channing Frye was plus 10 in 27 minutes. And while that's, you know, the traditional lineup with Tristan Thompson facing off against Dwight Howard is much more advantageous for the Hawks than it previously used to be, but the Frye lineup is perhaps even more swung towards Cleveland because Howard, for all of his strengths, is not as good as Al Horford is at getting out on the perimeter and contesting a guy like Frye and just the spacing that provides. And also, you know, it really helps with I thought LeBron kind of sleptwalked through the first half of this game. I think you would probably agree with that. He was not very good by his standards, especially in the first half. And once he turned things on later, you know, the last, you know, 18 minutes or so of this game, when Cleveland kind of made it a game again, but when they were trailing by, you know, 16, 18 points early in the third quarter, and when LeBron became LeBron again, it was sort of that worst nightmare scenario for the Hawks. Running the 1-4 pick and roll stuff and just LeBron doing LeBron things and ball movement. So there's a lot of things to worry about, I think, if you're the Hawks. It's just the Frye lineup is something that would scare me, and that's something that Hawks fans would worry about for a lot of different teams that play mobile big men. But at least on the bright side for Atlanta, facing off against the more traditional alignment with Thompson at center, it was much better. And this was not the game for the Tristan Thompson highlight reel at all.
No. I think it's interesting. One thing that's interesting that I think you hit on that's perfect is the LeBron factor, because he was very passive early. He was not an engaged LeBron. You posited this on Twitter to myself, Justin Rowan, and Fear the Sorting, and then Conrad Kazmarek, the former Fear the Sword site manager. We all kind of were like, yeah, like this is a passive LeBron, but it's just kind of what he does sometimes this year. I think you've seen him in the Sixers game. It's the same thing. Until they really needed him to do something, he did it. And tonight, it wasn't really enough. And some of that is guys just were hitting shots. I mean, Kevin Love didn't make a single three. Kyrie Irving was 1 of 7 from 3, even though he finished with 29 points. J.R. Smith took 10 threes, only made 2. I mean, that kind of hammers home what we're talking about a little bit. I think the other thing that's interesting, too, is the Thompson-Howard battle. Tristan Thompson, Tyronn Lue was asked about this after the game and kind of didn't get too into detail about this, but Thompson's done really, really well against the Hawks the past couple of years. Stylistically, he matches up really well with Al Horford. He does really well with Paul Millsap. Looking in person tonight and seeing both of them up and close, Thompson's a big, strong guy. Dwight Howard looked bigger than him. Like, he just looked like a stronger guy, and I think if you extend this over to the power forward spot, Paul Millsap is stronger than Kevin Love. I still think, like, the Cavs' front court presents problems for Atlanta that I think will be hard for them to counter, but if you look at just in terms of size against a good defensive rebounding front court, Atlanta has answers there, and maybe in that sense that gives them an advantage that they didn't have when these two teams have played in the playoffs the last 2 years.
Yeah, that's one weakness, you know, ultra weakness that the Hawks had that's now become, if not a full-fledged strength, it's certainly like somewhere in the middle on the rebounding battle. Dwight is that good at rebounding. That was the one thing that I kept talking about after they made the move to kind of go in the direction of Howard, is that he's so much better than Al Horford at one thing, and that is rebounding. There are other things that you can argue Dwight is better at, but that's the one thing that's really not up for debate. Dwight is an awesome rebounder, and he showed that in this game. I don't expect him to dominate Tristan Thompson, you know, 17-2. Singular rebounds and honestly similar minutes. I will only play 27 minutes in this game, but that's one area where I don't think to dominate the class like it does a team either. You know, 50-39 advantage in that area. The Hawks rebounded almost 30% of their misses in this game, which is pretty high for a Hawks team that doesn't really buy offensive rebounding all that much, but that's an advantage. And Howard's a big man. I kind of make fun of his height listing. He's not 6'11".
I don't think
that's true.
But I passed him in the tunnel, and I was like, you're not 6'11". Like, you're very big, but you're not 6'11".
but it's his width and his shoulders and stuff that you up close and personal, like you said, you can kind of tell just how big and strong and powerful he is. And Tristan's not the biggest guy in the world. I mean, he's not really true center size either. It's just that he's such a good rebounder and he's so agile and universal defensively that he makes up for a lot of that stuff. But Howard is a big man. I just looked it up, by the way, on the LeBron point. LeBron did not score until 2.5 minutes left in the second quarter in this game. That's just another indication of how, I don't want to say lucky, but how fortunate the Hawks were to be in a position they were in at halftime, being up 11, is that, you know, LeBron scored 2 points on 5 shots in the first half. So that's just another indication. I wanted to go back to that because I went and looked for it. But yeah, the Howard thing is interesting for sure. And I think Tristan, you know, it was not a great game for him, as we've established, but he'll play better than this. I think it's pretty safe to say against Howard. It's not that last side of a matchup. It's just, I think I know Hawks fans are very used to Tristan Thompson just being a huge problem for the Hawks. It's nice to see him on that standpoint be sort of neutralized, at least on a one game sample.
Yeah. The LeBron thing's so funny because he's a guy who didn't play that well by his standards, especially early on. And then in the third quarter, he just dropped 16 points, and it's like, oh, okay. Like,
well, I mean, he was minus 10 in the first half, and he finished the game plus 9. So just the second half, the Cavs were plus 19 with LeBron on the court. Kind of tells you all you need to know about him flipping the switch in the second half, and he's really was the instigator to make this game a run, because there was Cleveland had the big push when the lead went from 15-3 in about a 4 minute span in the fourth quarter, and that was pretty much LeBron doing LeBron stuff.
Yeah, LeBron doing LeBron stuff is something I just don't know how the Hawks really answer. Like,
they don't.
Like, you saw this tonight. I think there's just things with LeBron that when he was playing the level that when he really wanted to and was engaged, the Hawks didn't mentor. I mean, Thabo Sefolosha did a pretty decent job on him at times, but LeBron's too strong for him. When they ran those Kyrie-LeBron pick and rolls, Atlanta had no answer for those, and largely that's because of LeBron. I thought there's just when he's playing, like, the Hawks just don't have an answer, and that sort of kind of muddles this game for me a little bit, because we kind of traded DMs about this during the game, but it's hard to really know exactly how much broadly you can take away from this. And this is something, as someone who covers the Cavs, I kind of have an issue with when I'm, like, recapping games and I'm thinking about kind of the little stuff that matters. When I look at opponents, unless it's the Spurs, I guess, or the Warriors, it's hard to look at a game and think, okay, this matters, and this is why, and, like, I think maybe this presents problems for them. Even when I see stuff that I think the Cavs need to do better against a team like Atlanta, I'm skeptical of what it actually means in 6 months, or when the playoffs matter. Like, if the Cavs were playing the Hawks tomorrow in a 7-game series, I'd pick them to win in 4 or 5 games, and I don't think tonight really changed any of my really opinion on that, and that sort of kind of muddles of, like, how seriously I have to take some of the things that I saw tonight.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think, you know, just in this series perspective overall, I think I feel better about the Hawks with the way that they're constructed now against the Cavs, and that's kind of funny, especially for my listeners, I'm sure, because I'm known as the guy who's super anti this decision-making process that led them to having Howard and Schroeder and all this stuff, especially the Howard move I did not like. But in a Cleveland-focused matchup, I think they're better against the Cavs with Howard, just because of all things we've already talked about with the rebounding and rip protection. I thought LeBron was at least a little bit more passive early on when dealing with Dwight and getting in the middle. There was no resistance for him around the rim with Horford. And while, you know, the Hawks, you just said it, don't really have a guy who can guard LeBron, that still persists. I think that's one reason they drafted Torian Prince, but not as far as, you know, in his rookie season, that's not a guy who's going to do a whole heck of a lot to deal with the likes of LeBron and Paul George and Kawhi Leonard and those guys. That's more of a down the line thing. And for now, you know, Thabo Sefolosha is a great defender. Kent Blazemore is a very good defender, but neither one of those guys have just the physical size to deal with LeBron. I think Paul Millsap is probably the guy who's best built to guard LeBron, but if the Cavs are playing the way the Cavs play, that's really going to be something that the Hawks can't really do for large stretches. So it's a situation where it's the worst possible matchup. He's a bad matchup for everyone, but especially against the Hawks. And, you know, I think they might do better than, you know, I don't know. I think I'm probably with you that I would probably pick a 5-game series if the thing started tomorrow. And that seems pessimistic, but with the way that things have gone, you know, the Hawks had lost 11 straight games to the Cavs before tonight. It's the first win in 12 matchups. And
yeah,
some of those were close, and a lot of them were competitive late. But, you know, it's a decisive advantage for the Cavs, and that's not really going away just because of the one thing that I think that, you know, the Howard issue does help, but not enough to make it so, you know, the Hawks are a legitimate threat, in my opinion, to just beat the Cavs in the series. It's not like that.
Yeah, is there anything about what the Hawks played tonight that you thought was troublesome? Because I thought a lot of things really broke well for them. I thought Millsap probably could have shot a little bit better, but I thought Schroeder played out of his mind. Like, he was hitting He was hitting open threes every time the Cavs gave him one, which I think happened a couple times where Kyrie just kind of didn't bother to chase him out there, which I think is maybe the right strategy, but he hit them. And I think that was really impressive. I thought they got, even though he didn't shoot well, especially from three, I thought they got a couple some good defensive minutes out of Tim Hardaway, who I know is your favorite player ever. And, you know, you had the Mike Muscala had like a really, really nice 22 minutes. A very scary moment when he fell, and it looked a lot worse live from the angle I was at. Like, I thought he hit his head.
No, it looked bad on TV too. I can say the first time I thought he might have died.
But he had that dunk on LeBron, and he, you know, five from the field, three boards, like a good stint from him. Is there anything you didn't like about how the Hawks played against the Cavs?
No, not particularly. I thought they played well. I mean, I always get grief for kind of being negative, and I was already trying to pour water on this performance while it was happening and getting some pushback from people on Twitter. You know, the Hawks played well in this game. There's no question about that. You know, you mentioned Schroeder. That was his career high. He had 28 points in this game, and he only needed 16 shots to do it. Schroeder's not necessarily the guy you think about as being the most efficient player in the world, so having him have a super efficient game was very nice. Muscala is a guy I absolutely love. I thought he played great in this game. You know, you mentioned Hardaway. I don't love Hardaway, and the shooting numbers were what they were, but he was plus 12. He had the highest plus minus on the team tonight, and I don't really love that stat in a vacuum, but I thought he was okay. He was okay, especially when you give out the fact that he was 3 of 11 from the field. Like, he still managed to be like playable, whereas a lot of times in the past, Hardaway was unplayable if he wasn't shooting the ball well, and I thought he was okay in this game, which says a lot about him. But no, I thought it was a pretty nice performance. I was encouraged by the fact that Chris Humphreys only played 4 minutes in this game for the Hawks, because Humphreys is a guy who I think is solidly worse than Muscala at basically everything except for rebounding, and with Howard, you don't really need a rebounder next to him, so I like that a lot. And without Korver, you know, the Hawks had a 112 offensive rating in this game. If you told me that ahead of time, without in a game where they didn't have Korver and they were playing the Cavs on the road, I would have laughed you out of the building. Some of that's just shot making. Like you said, Schroeder shot the ball out of his mind. You don't expect him to shoot 3 of 6 from 3 and 10 of 16 from the floor. Bazemore was unconscious in this game. 4 of 6 from 3 at 25 points. It's nice to see him playing better. But, you know, all the positive shooting nights aside, I thought it was a pretty good performance across the board, even with the caveat that they didn't play as well as the box score would indicate, just because all the shots fell for everybody except for Hardaway Jr.
Yeah, I think the Korver absence is notable, because I thought early I was really kind of surprised how tight the spacing was for Atlanta without him on the floor. Obviously, he's a guy who is a great shooter. He tilts defenses because of how good of a shooter he is. And it was a little cramped without him there, and they seemed fine. And some of that, I think, certainly is the Cavs' effort. I just think, so, like, sometimes I can just say, okay, you can see Kyrie not chasing Schroeder out there when maybe he should. You can see LeBron not bothering to get in his hands. You can see J.R. Smith taking really terrible angles defending Kent Bazemore, who was also really, really good in this game. I think Korver, as much as, you know, that means Bazemore has to defend LeBron, which is not great. Korver does give you something on offense that I think would be really valuable. I think if you have him and he's healthy and he's shooting well, Dwight inside, Millsap, Korver, a shooter who's playing well, and Bazemore's a pretty good five to go against the Cavs. And this is maybe a little bit of a take after this game, but I kind of feel more optimistic about how Atlanta's going to play Cleveland. I would not pick Atlanta. I would not pick against the Cavs in the East, but I'm starting to think maybe I was undervaluing the Hawks' chances of beating the Cavs. It's a one-game sample. There's a lot of things, like you said, like maybe Tristan does better against Dwight once they've played a little bit more, but I really, really liked what I saw, and I like what it could be.
Yeah, I mean, the Hawks play well, again, in this game. It was just, for me, you know, there's some of the stuff you mentioned, the defensive effort for Cleveland. That's definitely worth talking about, because I thought, especially early on, for as bad as, you know, both teams were bad offensively in the first quarter, aside from that, I thought, you know, Cleveland's defense was not great in this game. And a lot of that early was because I think you mentioned the lack of spacing early on for the Hawks. You know, without Korver, I've kind of been on this corner where I've always been saying that Korver is the only guy on this team that we know is a good shooter. there's some more guys on this team that I think we know are okay shooters, like Bazemore, like Millsap. Hardaway Jr. is an okay shooter. There's guys that we know like can make shots, but in terms of being a legitimately above average 3-point shooter, Korver's the only guy that we absolutely know that about. And to have him off the court, you saw it early on. You know, the Hawks had a 75 offensive rating in the first quarter, and a lot of that's because they're playing. I was surprised they decided to start Tabas Efolosha. Honestly, I thought they might go with Bazemore and Hardaway Jr. You know, part of that's the LeBron factor. I don't think they wanted Bazemore to have to guard LeBron all the time because it's just a whole matchup for Bazemore, as we talked about before. He's given up so much size there that he basically just it's like a fly on LeBron's back, just kind of like Damari Carroll but worse. You know, LeBron always used to own Damari Carroll, and Damari is about 2 inches, maybe 3 inches taller than Bazemore and as thick. So I know that's probably why they did that, but offensively, that really hurts the Hawks to have to play Bazemore and Cephalosha together. Bazemore's shooting will in this game really helped, because by the end, the Cavs were having to fly out on him because Bazemore had proven he was knocking down shots on this night. And Millsap being able to provide some space helps as well. But in a vacuum, you know, you got Schroeder, who's a below average shooter. You got Cephalosha, who's a below average shooter. And then you have a couple of solid shooters in Millsap and Bazemore with his five on the floor. And then of course, Dwight's a non-shooter. So the pick and roll stuff with Dwight helps, I think, to create some space in a way that it wouldn't have in the past, because they didn't really have that dive man in the pick and roll. But, you know, being blamed without Korver, you know, Korver gets a lot of crap for how he played against the Cavs the last couple of years in the playoffs. And for me, you know, most of that is because Cleveland just decided we're taking Kyle Korver away. Mm-hmm. And if you do that, you know, a team as good as Cleveland can take a guy away. A lot of teams, you know, in the regular season, just even if they want to take Korver away, can't pull it off without preparation. But in a series against a team as good as Cleveland, they can do that. And I think some of that's been unfair on Korver. But to not have him and still play as well offensively was a positive. I just don't know how that works in a series like we've been talking about, you know, in a potential like a 1-4 or even a 1-8 if the Hawks stumble playoff series. That I don't see that really happening without Korver, for the Hawks to be able to put in a decent offense on the court.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I think Atlanta is could really use another wing, like another bigger wing who, even if he struggles as a shooter, that player could be really useful against the Cavs.
Well, and that's why they're trying to. That's why they went with Taurean Prince. I mean, that's the whole reason they did it. He's just a rookie, and he's not going to be able to play in that series. Like, he can't play. Yeah. We saw that tonight. There was flashes from him, but he's not ready, and nobody knows it. Nobody thinks he is either. He just had to play tonight.
Yeah, rookies, I mean, the general rule of thumb with rookies, unless you're this absurdly good rookie, you're going to struggle severely enough where it is really, really hard to get you on the floor. I mean, you see that with kind of every rookie, especially on the wing, because NBA playing in defense in the NBA, it just happens to be really, really hard. Like, it's just a hard thing to grasp. It's a harder thing to do. I'll tell you this. I didn't get to talk to the Hawks after the game, but being in the Cleveland locker room and hearing Tyronn Lue talk about this a little bit, I don't think the Cavs were particularly annoyed. I think LeBron was like a little bit, because I don't think he really particularly enjoys losing in this way, but I don't think this is something that I think really frustrated him. I think they're frustrated because of how they lost, not because they lost, if that makes sense. Like, I think they're frustrated with the process. I think they're frustrated with some of the how they're just kind of the effort levels maybe not there. I think for Tyronn Lue, that's not really ideal. But I don't think that they hit any sort of, you know, severe anxiety about that. And I don't really think they should have. But kind of off of that, what do you take away from this? If you're watching, as someone who covers the Hawks and it watches the Cavs, I'm sure, like, you know, has seen them a couple times, and obviously they're kind of the same team they have been. Was there something new that you noticed, or anything kind of interesting that you noticed watching this game?
I think some of it is on the Cleveland side that, like, and this is not breaking news to you, I'm sure, but, you know, not having a backup point guard, and having that, you know, that some of that, there was a lineup early on that I think Conrad and some of the people were yelling about that had Shump playing point guard, and this weird no LeBron, no Kyrie, no Kevin Love lineup that I just couldn't believe was playing.
They have not done that at all this year. I don't think, I can't remember that being a thing to date. And Tyronn Lue's rotations this year have kind of been, not that I think he had to really set them right away, and you're incorporating Dunleavy and stuff, but they haven't really set rotations this year. They don't really know exactly who's going to come and when and who's going to play with who just yet, and you can kind of see that, I think, when they're playing with one another.
Yeah, and it's a nitpicking thing. Like, that's a this is obviously a championship contender, and I cover a team that's not one of those. So you're looking for things like that. But you know, Shump is very, very important to the Cavs. That scares me a little if I'm on the Cavs fan.
Freaks me out all the time, man.
I thought he was pretty decent in this game, honestly, for him. But not a big fan of his game in general, so that would worry me. But aside from that, I thought the Fry lineup was very, very good, even with the caveat that Fry only shot 5 of 15, and that's a good sign, I think, for Cleveland. If they can play that well with him on the court when he's not making shots, that's encouraging against a real opponent. Because I think the Hawks are not as good as people think they are in general, but the Hawks are a real competitive, well-coached basketball team. So if Cleveland can operate at a high level on a night where – you know, a lot of things go wrong for them offensively. Like, they still could have won this game. This is a one possession game late, and basically nothing went right for the Cavs in this game.
Yeah, I thought there were a couple moments where it felt like they could have really taken over the game, and then they didn't. Like, it just felt that way, and that's certainly
for sure.
Just like, it just felt like things just broke certain ways, and then it happened. And that's certainly just, that's how games work. I mean, that's just how generally NBA games work. The Shumpert thing's interesting because he had that little stretch where he hit that three where his stroke were really nice, and then he had a dunk, and he had to do it with a really nice dribble, and I'm like, oh, Amon Shumpert just did something really good again, and that's, like, a very rare thing for him. Because I'm with you, I'm not really the biggest believer in what he is.
Oh, no. I mean, and then that's something that I've noticed about Cavs Twitter in general, is that I don't think anybody really believes in Shump, but you know, I don't know how you feel about this. I think by the end of the year, your backup point guard will be someone that's not on the roster, so it's not going to really matter as much. There'll be somebody that they pick up from somewhere, and that'll be that. And I like Kay Felder, by the way, but in the vacuum, I don't think he's going to be as a huge member of this team this year. But yeah, look, it's tough. But I'm trying to be objective from the Hawks' perspective. I always get killed, as I said before, for being too negative. And I want to say again, the Hawks played really well in this game. But in terms of being encouraged by the Hawks, there were lots of stuff to be encouraged by. And this is a tough measuring stick for the Hawks. It's like, you know, are they going to be the Cavs? No. Nobody, even the people that are highest on the Hawks, I don't think anybody thinks that they're going to beat the Cavs in a series. So is it something that could be encouraging for the Hawks in the long term? I think, sure, there's some stuff in this game. I thought Dwight was really, really good. So if he continues to play as well as he has early on and Schroeder plays as well, then sure, the Hawks can win 50 games. If I don't think that's going to happen, but if it does, then sure, but all power to you. But it's one game in November, and I think you and I both know there's not a ton to take from this game. That was kind of our first reaction to each other offline, was, you know, what do we take from this thing? And there's stuff you can try to take from it, but in the grand scheme, it's November the 8th. As we record, it's about to be November 9th. Like, it's not that much to take from it. It's one NBA game in November.
Yeah, I 100% am with you on that. I think the things that stood out to me was, I think seeing the Dwight difference, I think, is what really interests me most about this game, was seeing how the front court looked and how the different style Hawks really did look. Let's end on this. You mentioned Hawks fans a couple times. How did in your interaction to them when you're tweeting from Peachtree Hoops or you're tweeting on your own Twitter account or wherever, what are some of the reactions from Hawks fans to this game?
I think just a general excitement. You know, a lot of I know that I have, and Chris Willis and people at Peachtree Hoops have gotten the reputation that we were not super high on the new regime in terms of Dwight and replacing Al. So a lot of it's just like poking fun at us for being quote unquote wrong, which is fine. I mean, before the game, I was already saying all day, and on the preview podcast with Justin Rowan of your website, of course, you know Justin well.
Yeah.
Talking about how I thought the Hawks matched up better with the Cavs. So some of that stuff didn't really surprise me. But you know, most of the pushback is that the rebounding was the biggest takeaway. That was always also the biggest pregame takeaway, was that was always the focus when the Hawks were losing. It was all about rebounding, because that's the obvious box score thing people can look at, like, oh, Al Horford can't rebound, Dwight Howard's good at that, so maybe that's gonna fix the Hawks. And on this one game sample, the Hawks dominated the glass and they won. So the natural reaction is going to be, oh, that was all the Hawks needed to do, and now they've solved the Cavs. And I'm making it simpler than it is. Most people aren't saying just that, but there's some of that out there, and I think there's a lot more optimism. And that's fine. It's part of being a fan to be optimistic and hopeful about your team. So I'm not trying to crap on that. I'm really not. I just think that was the biggest takeaway that I saw online during the game and after the game, was that Hawks fans were super excited, and it's fine. I don't really share that excitement. but I'm also not going to try to kill them on this particular night because it was fun. I mean, the Cavs have been the bugaboo for the Hawks for a long time. So to beat them on their home floor, even on a night where basically nobody watched this game because of the election, it was one of those things where it was still fun as someone who, you know, I don't really root for the Hawks anymore. You know, as a team that I cover, I still root for them, but it's not like I'm living and dying like I probably used to as a more fan than an analyst, but it was still fun.
Yeah, I'm with you. My fandom has sort of died, to be kind of dramatic about it, over the years. Like, the finals was certainly a very peak moment and a big moment, and just a very exciting moment, but not something I don't find it useful to get very emotionally invested anymore. And I cover it when you cover something, I think that does just kind of naturally happen, because you can't, if you're in locker rooms, if you can't really be a fanboy if you're in there interviewing players and trying to like do a job alongside other journalists. I'll say this, the mood in Cleveland, I don't know how it is, because we're, you know, you're in Georgia, I'm in Ohio, they're, you know, kind of different states, but in the arena there was a lot of just kind of general attention to the election one way or the other. I think there was a lot of talking about it. I mean, when I leave the arena, I always talk to these couple security guards. I mean, they were all like on their phones, like looking at Twitter, looking at the New York Times update or thing, and like talking about it and kind of just having these dialogues, whatever they were. And it's kind of interesting that something like that, and I mean, something that obviously has so much importance really kind of falls in a basketball game. And I mean, I think, after his presser, after he wrapped up his official on the record comments, Ty Lue kind of asked about it to us as a media group too, and it was just kind of something that I think was really related. I think it was very prevalent, even when however people voted, whatever, it was really, really interesting that it was just kind of like a game where everything that was happening in this game was just very overshadowed by something bigger that was going on, and it's so early in the season. Too.
Yeah, I made the joke before the game, actually, that if it wasn't the Cavs, this would have been the all-timer for lowest TV rating in Atlanta for the Hawks game, because the Cavs inspire people's attention because it's the Cavs. They played them in the playoffs. It's LeBron. And, you know, people were engaged. I mean, there were a lot of the diehard Hawks fans were still tweeting and watching, and I know they were involved, but I can't imagine the casual fan was super dialed in on this game, especially being on the road. You know, in Cleveland, I'm assuming it was basically a packed house, because it pretty much always is there, right? So at least you have the people in the arena that were, in theory, paying attention to the game, whereas in Atlanta, it was basically the diehards and the diehards alone. And it's tough to blame them, because there's a lot going on and stuff that matters a lot more than basketball. But, you know, you and I got to watch it. We dissected as much as humanly possible on this podcast for a game in November. And listen, there's a basketball game tomorrow. The Hawks play the Bulls on Wednesday night. I'll be in attendance, and the NBA rolls on, and I'm sure people will overreact to what happens in that game and whatever happens in the next Cavs game. That's kind of what basketball is and what fandom is, and we'll be here to kind of level people out, I think, on either side of it.
Yeah, obviously the Bulls obviously are the greatest team in the league, and they can shoot threes now, apparently.
Oh, absolutely, like number one.
Yeah, they're so good. I mean, Dwayne Wade has revolutionized the team. Again, this is something that we've hit on too. This is so early in the season. It is early in the season. The Cavs are kind of figuring things out. I'm sure you can say the Hawks are probably incorporating. Howard Suther incorporating things. When you don't have your guy. I mean, Schroeder is a distinct change from Teague. So
big time.
These changes. And these teams don't play again, having Googled it really quick as we were recording. They don't play again until March, after the All-Star break. And then they play April, twice in April, right before the playoffs. We're going to see how these teams really get to evolve. And I kind of always like when teams that might play each other in the playoffs and have a history with one another do get to play this early in the year, because I like seeing how the changes and how they match up at different points in the year. Like, one of the things that kind of bumps me out about Cavs-Warriors this year is sort of a auxiliary point to this. They play on December 25th on Christmas, and then I think they play within 2-3 weeks later. They're not gonna. That's not a lot of time to adjust and like grow, or you know, maybe do something and see how the team matches up differently. I kind of like when things like this are spaced out, especially when the Cavs are going to play the Hawks 4 times in the regular season.
Yeah, it's you know, I think late in the year you could have some stuff where you don't learn a lot about the Cavs because LeBron's not playing or something. If the Cavs have
LeBron might be on the bench in like a suit and like with ice packs on his knees as Kay Felder's playing 45 minutes.
Yeah, that might happen, but I agree. It was a lot of fun to watch these two teams in certain ways because it's so early. But everybody, you know, relatively full strength. You know, the Hawks are missing some guys, but seeing those teams battle and the new looks, it gives us some stuff to talk about at the very least. And now you mentioned it. I mean, that's a 3 or 4 month break here before we see these two teams again. And for at least for Hawks fans, I think the Cavs are, you know, the most interesting opponent for the Hawks all season, given that they do play that many times and because of the playoff history. You know, the Cavs have bigger fish to fry with the Warriors and things like that, you know, being the defending champs. But for the Hawks fans, I think this is probably the game they most circled on their calendar, aside from maybe the Celtics because of the Al Horford angle. It's the Cavs as the biggest, I wouldn't say rival because the Cavs own the Hawks for the most part, but for instance, I have to do power rankings tomorrow for another website. I'm actually going to write that after we get off the phone here, and the Cavs are going to be ahead of the Hawks, and I guarantee Hawks fans will not be happy about that because they're going to say, look, the Hawks beat the Cavs on the road, and I'm going to say, you know what, the Cavs are better than the Hawks. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Anyway. I don't know, man, that one game in November just means quite a bit.
It is early, so every game means more, and we're talking about rankings and stuff, but come on, guys.
Yeah, I pray for your mentions, Brad. I hope they're not too much of a tire fire, because sometimes that it's just one thing that can set your mentions off into...
I'm hoping for this game it's actually the Mike Muscala dunk, because Mike Muscala put on a show, and I love Mike Muscala so much, so I hope that's the overarching takeaway of this game, is that Muscala remains super sneakily athletic and a gym rat.
Yeah. The last thing, we'll wrap it up on that. So a week ago, it was maybe 2 weeks ago now, I don't know if you saw that the pass LeBron threw where then he had the quote where he was like, I'm the only player in the world that could do this.
Yes, I did see that.
So I tweeted like a that out, like in a, I took a picture of it off of my like an Evernote, and then I screenshotted it and tweeted it out. I'm still getting people like in my mentions, like mad at me for that. Like mad about LeBron saying that. Like 3-4 hours ago, I'm like, people being like, Boris Diaw could do that. I'm like, that's not the point. Like, I'm sure LeBron understands.
No, it
like,
is not.
Like, that's not the point. LeBron is, like, throwing some shade at people. Like, that is what he's doing. Like, you don't need to, like, well, actually, me and Twitter sometimes is the best. Sometimes is when people just kind of overreact to stuff. It's the absolute worst. So I hope your mentions when you write power rankings that people don't get too angry. I mean, who right now would be your number one, by the way, overall?
I think I'm going to put the Cavs number one. I had a number one last week. You know, in a playoff series, if the Cavs played the Warriors, I'd have to think about it. But aside from that, I mean, we know what the Cavs are versus the Warriors are still this, this team is still morphing. The Warriors obviously have the craziest, you know, starting five in the history of the league, maybe. But with what we know at this moment, I think Cleveland's so much more comfortable on their own skin than Golden State is that I would probably pick them in a series if it started today. And that's kind of what power rankings are supposed to be. They're not always that, because it's sometimes it's about who's playing better, et cetera, and like what people's records are. But Cleveland's got one loss. They have the best record in the league, even with this loss. And, you know, they're still playing like themselves, and they are the reigning champion. So it's not like they're number one until they get knocked off, because that's kind of silly in my opinion, but they're still playing as well or better than anybody in the league. So I think I'm going to put the Cavs there. Don't hold me to that. If that changes in the next hour, because it's, you know, post midnight on the East Coast, and my brain is probably fried, but I think I'm going to go with the Cavs.
Yeah, I think that's kind of thing I would do too. So this has been another Locked On Cavs, Locked On Hawks crossover. It's always fun to talk to Brad. We'll talk to him again in March, I'm for sure. We'll do this again. So, Brad, thanks for recording this, and hopefully your brain isn't too mush when the listeners hear this a couple hours after.
Thanks for having me, sir, as always, and we'll do it again when the teams face off in March.
Absolutely. Thanks, man.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.